And we welcome into the program the chairwoman of the Charleston County Democratic Party, our friend for many years, former county council member. We say hello to Colleen Condon. How you doing, Colleen?
Great, Richard. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, well, no. I mean, this is a huge week in the history of the city of Charleston. I don't know if there's ever been a week like this with the debate and the primary and all of the candidates down here. I was mentioning the fact that the candidates are really in the Lowcountry more than any other part of the state because it's the most liberal Democratic part of the state, right?
Absolutely, although some of them have purposely spread out and aimed at other parts of the state because the way you pick up delegates can't allow you to pick them up from just Congressional District 2 or just Congressional District 6.
Well, I mean, the good thing is that they're stimulating our economy down here. The restaurants and bars are all full, and there's all kinds of events going on all over the Lowcountry, too. So how busy are you as the chairwoman of the Democratic Party this week leading up to the primary on Saturday?
This is my Super Bowl. Absolutely. I didn't work much last week. This week, all I'm doing is my volunteer job as chair.
That's it. Just your volunteer job as chair.
Yep.
Now, how did it become that you, who were council, how long were you on county council?
12 years.
How did it become that you evolved into this job as chairwoman of the Charleston County Democratic Party?
Well, you know, I've done pretty much every job in politics in Charleston Democratic affairs, from putting up signs, raising money, running for office, helping others, serving as an elected official. And it was important to have somebody who was knowledgeable and prepared to really handle what we knew was going to be such a heavy political season. And so I was asked to run last year, and glad I did.
I'm going to say, how are you liking it?
I love it. It is my passion to be helping other candidates win.
What does the chairwoman of a political party do? What do you do?
Raise money is a lot of it, and organize volunteers. You think it's hard enough to manage folks that you pay. It's much harder to manage people who are doing it out of love of politics, love of democracy, and taking all their interests. So spending a lot of time working with team members who are out knocking on doors or convincing folks to run for office. We've just bought a long-term lease, and we're actually in the old Patrick's location and have a full-time year-round office now.
Now, do you have much contact with any of the campaigns? Like, do they reach out to you as the chairwoman of the party and say, we need some help with this or some help with that? Or do you know a location we can hold this?
For the presidential campaigns?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
For the presidential campaigns, now they're pretty much running themselves.
Okay.
But certainly back in the fall and last spring, we were absolutely, they'd call and, Tulsi Abbott's campaign would call and say, we want to have an event in Charleston. Can you help us find a venue?
Okay, because I was just one, and then obviously when it comes to the local elections, whether they be for city council, county council, I know those are like nonpartisan or whatever, but yeah, anyway. But then you've got congressional seats and other things going on, and and then there'll be a Senate race in South Carolina. I read your column in the Charleston City paper, and you were pretty excited about the prospects in 2020 for Democrats here in the Lowcountry. And across the state, since Lindsey Graham is running for re-election and Jamie Harrison is going to be a viable Democratic opponent against him.
This is going to be such an exciting year. Again, I've been involved for 30 years. I have never seen a year like this, where we literally look at races and we can look and see what Joe Cunningham won versus what Trump won and see areas that seem really clear that a very Republican seat is now going to be likely won by a Democrat. State Senate 43, State Senate 41. I mean, we're talking Glenn McConnell's old seat is one of these. We're winning it this time. Definitely.
Now, let me ask you, were you surprised that Joe Cunningham won, and are you surprised at how much they are focusing and targeting him as one of those races of interest? Because it appears it's going to be State Rep Nancy Mace, who will probably be the Republican opponent for Joe Cunningham. But that is a very interesting race that has already begun. I mean, the ads started in 2019 against Joe Cunningham. So that's going to be going on all year. Were you surprised he won? And do you think he can get reelected?
I am ecstatic that he won. I was hopeful, but I wasn't holding my breath that they would really pull it off. They have, and now when we look at 2018 results across Charleston County, we can see paths to success for Democrats. So he is a wonderful congressman. I am proud of him holding his own opinion up there. He represents, I think, the Lowcountry well. But by being someone that isn't, the most liberal of Democrats. It means he's not necessarily favored by some of our most liberal voters here. But he also, therefore, is appealing to a lot of that middle.
Yeah, I mean, they say he's the most independent, one of the most independent congressmen. Right. And that's an important thing
across
for him to run.
Across the country.
Yeah, because a lot of people, and let me do this as a twofold question. A lot of people will associate Congressman Joe Cunningham, or any Democrats, it doesn't matter, with, say, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who have high negatives for some. On the flip side, if you're a Republican running, you're going to be associated with President Trump, Mitch McConnell, with high negatives for some. And so I'm just wondering, as you do this, I mean, you're running a campaign that's focusing on local issues, but it has an attachment to national issues.
Which is why they're putting more money trying to take him out than any other Democratic congressman across the country.
Really?
Yes. He is the target of the Republican Congressional Committee.
But then when he runs commercials and he talks about his independent nature, you were just alluding to it. Does that somehow, in some ways, alienate some of those liberal supporters that got him into office in the first place or are so energized right now during this week here in Charleston?
Well, for example, some of the Sanders folks aren't necessarily as fond of Joe Cunningham. He came out specifically and pointed out that Bernie Sanders doesn't necessarily represent, in Joe's opinion, the majority of Democrat and Democrat-leaning voters here in Charleston County. Richard, you would be shocked by the number of people who come whisper in my ear on a daily basis who I know have voted in every Republican primary for 10, 20 years and say, I want anybody but Trump. I've been watching the debates. I'm telling you that while Operation Chaos is talked about, that's just a cover for how many people come to me who, again, hard R say, I voted for Joe Cunningham. I can't vote for Trump again. And those folks are who are going to change this election in 2020. And I am working hard every day with a number of candidates to turn that same Joe Cunningham success into the state Senate.
So let me go back to what you started with there. And that is that Joe Cunningham did come out and say that basically South Carolinians are not interested in socialism. That in and of itself told me he doesn't feel the burn. And, you know, that can be a double-edged sword for him in a political sense, right?
Absolutely. You know, there are some very strong Bernie supporters. You know, probably about a third in this area is what I see is our strong Bernie folks. But you know what? There are also 60% of Democratic voters who don't want to vote for Bernie.
Well, let me ask you then, as the chairwoman of the Charleston County Democratic Party, how would you feel if Bernie Sanders was the nominee? I mean, it's an octogenarian socialist at the top of the ticket. He is the front runner right now, and the primary in South Carolina is going to have go a long way to determining what happens moving forward. But there's a lot of people who are concerned about that. I'm just wondering, what can you say about that?
My job as chair is to help with all Democrats and help lift all boats. So certainly if Bernie Sanders wins in South Carolina and becomes our nominee, certainly, I will support him and work with his supporters. But my job also is to make sure that the sheriff's candidate gets elected and the state senator and Jamie Harrison. So with it, regardless of who our presidential nominee is, we know that after this week, the presidential nominee isn't going to come back to South Carolina.
Okay,
very often.
I'm glad you said that because they basically don't. Once the nomination process is over, they don't come back to South Carolina because this is a red state, but we're in the blue oasis here along the Carolina coast in what is a red state. So that then you agree with that. They're not going to be coming back to South
Carolina.
They're
not coming back regardless. So I really hope that all these activists voting, you know, who are working on all these presidential campaigns are now going to look and see what candidates they like on the local level and be helping them the same. So regardless of who the top of the ticket is, we're going to be working on Jamie Harrison. We're going to be working on Richard Rissick and Sam Scarden and Chris Graziano for sheriff and Ben Pogue for solicitor.
And now let me ask you here, because, you know, Lindsey Graham has gone through a transformation in the eyes of many, and now he is going to face an opponent in the Democrat Jamie Harrison. Do you feel like there's a shot to unseat Lindsey Graham? Because, you know, in South Carolina, we don't change senators, but like once every half a century or something like that. So do you think Jamie's got a shot?
Richard, it's crazy, but yes, I really do believe Jamie has a real shot. There was $7 million raised in the last quarter of 2019 by Jamie and by Lindsey combined, $3.5 and $3.9 million in one quarter for a race that isn't till this November. that's how polarizing that race is across the country, whether people love Lindsey or hate him.
Yeah, that is. It's been an evolution in people's feelings about him on both sides of the political aisle for a variety of reasons that we won't go into. But let me go back to the fact then, though, that as you mentioned, that there are people who are like they're hard R Republicans, but they really don't want to vote for Trump again.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering, would that same sort of mentality exist if Bernie's the nominee and there's people who are hard D's and they're like, I really cannot support a socialist at the top of the ticket. I mean, what happens then? Because you need everybody in the boat paddling in the same direction. And I mean, this is going to be, I mean, it's a 50-50 nation right now. It really is. And you know, we see what, this is going to be a close election in November regardless. And I know you're really more focused on the local stuff like that, but there'll be people whispering in your ear, perhaps, if Bernie's the nominee. I'm just kind of wondering.
Well, there's absolutely in this country, you know, 35% or more that's very liberal, 35% or more that's very conservative. They aren't switching. So are there strong Trumpers out there still and strong Bernie people out there today? Absolutely. The question is what's happening in that middle 10 to 20%. That's where decisions are made. And are there some of those folks going to be okay voting for Bernie? Yes. Are there others that aren't? That's true. I'm not speaking against Bernie, but I know realistically there are a lot of moderates out there. But a lot of people also believe in increasing the minimum wage. A lot of people believe in health care improvements. So when you start looking at those, having a dreamer can allow us to head in that direction.
All right, so let me come back at you this question then. There's a lot of people out there when they look at the entire Democratic field for running for president, they'll say there are no moderates.
Oh, I totally disagree.
Well, I know you would. You're the chairwoman of the Charles County Democratic
right.
Party. But a lot of people would say that those that they consider moderate really aren't that moderate. I'm curious to get your take on that.
No, I definitely think that Pete Buttigieg, Liz Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Joe Biden, they all represent the opinions that really do capture most of those people in the middle.
So you really, Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren, you would throw in there as moderates?
Absolutely. Liz Warren's kind of on that edge, which is interesting to me because I was curious what would happen, whether the Sanders folks and the Warren folks would end up combining. That's where it's very odd. It's not a clear ideological basis because otherwise those two you would think would overlap. But Warren is, I think, more moderate, but she's been skewing more left-wing in this election
cycle. It seems like they all are. I mean, it seems like the entire party has moved over to the point where, I mean, when every single candidate, except for Amy Klobuchar, keeps her hand down and says, well, how would you be comfortable with a socialist at the top of the ticket? That says a lot about the current state of the Democratic Party, doesn't it?
I think they're probably all squinching a little bit as they say it. not all, but certainly some. I think that it comes down to things that are becoming mainstream issues now. Flooding.
Oh, yeah,
flooding is
right.
Climate change. That is something that it's not a scary word to say like it was politically a couple of years ago in Republican circles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are still crazy climate defenders like Chip Campson out there who say, you know, that flooding isn't overtaking Charleston County. I don't know where he's been, but whatever. But most people see that as a mainstream issue, not a left-wing issue. Paying someone enough that they can rent a two-bedroom apartment. We know how expensive it is to live here. If minimum wage won't allow you to put a kid and yourself in a two-bedroom apartment, we need incomes raised.
All right, well, let me stop there and just play devil's advocate. If minimum wage is not a livable wage, minimum wage is the entry-level wage that you work your way up to get a better wage because you did well in school and you're working towards getting a better job. You're going to see, I mean, Andrew Yang, I was a fan of the Yang gang because he was actually talking about the fact that you're looking at 30% of all jobs to be eliminated in the next 50 years because of automation, because of AI and things like that. The ones that are going to be losing their jobs are the very people out there protesting for higher minimum wage when companies are going to say, you know what, we're going to just end up automating this and we can save money doing it that way. I'm curious to get your take on that.
It definitely is why we need better Trident Tech and other opportunities. Trident Tech's really expanded, for example, their aeronautical program, their nursing program. Mm-hmm. We absolutely need to have those kind of skills. I think our generation was raised that you had to have a college degree. I think that's certainly true now, but you and I know some plumbers are making a lot more money than even lawyers.
Amen to that. We should have never gotten rid of vocational education in the high schools and stuff. And a place like Trident's doing great stuff. I guess it's safe to say there's a big difference between the Charleston Democrat and a Charlestown, Massachusetts Democrat?
Oh, absolutely. And it's different than from an Anderson County Democrat. Charleston Democrats, absolutely in the middle. We aren't pushing for some of the things you're going to see in Charlestown, Massachusetts. We are more conservative. And that's where it's intriguing to me to see the support Bernie's getting in light of what I hear usually of us being more conservative.
You know, South Carolina has a history of political incidents that occur over presidential campaigns. I think back to 2008 with Clinton and Obama and how nasty and ugly that got with an issue of race and stuff. I think back to 2000 with John McCain and George W. Bush and how nasty that got. But in both cases, it really launched the winner of the South Carolina primary onto the national level. And in this case, here we are. South Carolina is playing another pivotal role in deciding who's going to be the nominee for president.
And it's crazy that we have Steyer in the top three. I mean, he's worked really hard here.
Oh, man. He's been running a ton of money. He's been running ads for years. He's been spending a ton of money in South Carolina. I thought it was interesting that Joe Biden said, that's why my numbers came down, because he's putting so much money out there, and not including the fact that, you know, he did terrible in Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada. But Tom Steyer is polling
Tom
well
Steyer's
in this state.
Going to be in the top three here in South Carolina, but he's irrelevant. Sorry, Tom fans. I hear you, and I like what he's saying, but the reality is he hasn't spent this kind of money in any other state. He's not blipping on any other polls elsewhere in the country. So it's a wasted vote to vote for Tom Steyer, in my opinion. Again, like him, like a lot of people who are working on his team. He has spent the money, which is important. Money is the mother's milk of politics, and he's put time in the ground here. But when it's not going to carry forward to even Super Tuesday, that's a wasted vote in my mind.
Well, let me ask you then, you brought up the word money, and of course money makes the world go round when it comes to politics, but all of a sudden there is a group of people saying, you know, this former mayor from New York who's spending $1 billion of his own money to become president, wouldn't that be sort of an antithetical message if the Democrats nominated a billionaire from New York?
Billionaire from New York.
All right, so you're even questioning his Democrat bona fides, if you will. I mean, is he a Democrat at all?
I don't like litmus tests. Yeah. I like the concept of a big tent that allows to have Bloomberg Democrats and Sanders Democrats. But now I do think that middle area is what is going to be probably a path to victory.
Well, it's a fascinating time here. And so for people who've been listening to this, are like, okay, I want to get involved. I want to, because you're talking about volunteers. I mean, talking about campaigning, going door to door. And people don't really understand, I think, how much volunteerism is required. It is dependent upon when it comes to running political parties and political events and political campaigns. So anybody who's listening to this conversation and they say, you know what, I want to be a part of the Charleston County Democratic Party, I want to help out going in towards this political year, how can they get in touch with you and the Democratic Party to volunteer their time in whatever way that they could find a way to fit?
The best way to do so is grab your phone and send a text to 555-888, and the text message will be CHS for Charleston. And that'll then get you on our newsletter, get you about all of our volunteer activities. I mean, we have over 700 people who wanted to volunteer for the debate this week.
Is that because they wanted to get a ticket to get in? Is that why?
They absolutely wanted to get in, but they're that excited about it that they're helping with other events around the debate as well.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting year, and I always enjoy the conversation from all sides, because I want to hear from everybody and let people make an educated choice, because as you mentioned, you got a staunch group on the left and a staunch group on the right. They're making the most noise. They're getting the most attention. I really, truly believe that 2/3 to 3/4 of people would define themselves as fiscally conservative, socially liberal. People like to be in the middle, and they want to find a way to compromise because there's a lot of stuff that needs to be addressed, and nothing is really getting done. And the irony is they're all in Charleston, South Carolina this week, because here comes President Trump on Friday at the Coliseum. So,
take your selfie with any presidential candidate of your choice this week.
Colleen, thank you so much for coming in here, and good luck this entire week. You know, I know there's a lot of events going on. Are there any events going on around town you want to mention? Because there's so many of them.
Absolutely. I know people are a little frustrated that the debate tickets are hard to come by, but each of the candidates are having their own events this week that are at no charge. And I absolutely encourage you, if you're looking at one or more of these candidates, Go see Amy Klobuchar at Charlestown Landing tomorrow. Go see Bernie at the Coliseum. Come join Pete Friday morning at the Citadel. There are lots of free activities, and if you send that text message, you'll get an updated with all the candidates. Well, Democratic, that is. I'm not going to point out that thing happening Friday at the Coliseum.
Well, that's okay. They wouldn't even have a primary in this state, which that's a whole nother conversation.
They just took it out when Mark Sanford himself wanted to run.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that at all. So it's 555-888.
And then the message is CHS.
CHS, and that's how you can get in touch with the Charleston County Democratic Party, and it is going to be a fascinating year, and I'm sure this is not the last time that we have this conversation, but enjoy your week and everything else, and thank you for being on there. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, Richard. So glad you're back on the air.
Thank you. Colleen Condon, chairwoman of the Charleston County Democratic Party.